Hello. How are you today? Very good. It won't last.
So, I've had a nice lunch. Now is the opportunity. Maybe I'll just answer one question, then we go into the meditation I promised earlier about Emperor's Three Questions meditation. But first of all, a quick question. All people striving to go to Nirvana, either by meditation, chanting, etc. Did the Buddha say what Nirvana is like? Are there different levels of it? That's a great question, because many people, they want to go to Nirvana. They don't know what it's going to be like when they get there. Are you sure you really want to go? So that's sometimes striving. That striving leads to stress. So if you strive for Nirvana, you never get it. It's just like the story of the donkey and the carrot. If you're sitting quietly, I will begin. Once upon a time, there was a donkey who would pull carts and with produce and people, and it never wanted to pull anything. And so it would just sit there and refuse to move. And sometimes people think they get a stick out and they hit the donkey. That's really cruel. And you might know that doesn't matter how hard you hit the donkey won't move. Which is why we have the saying, as stubborn as a donkey. And that's not the way to use the stick on a donkey. You don't hit the donkey with a stick. You tie the stick to the donkey's neck. So the front of the stick is 2 foot in front of the donkey's head. On the end of the stick there is a string. And on the end of the string there is a carrot. If you come from other cultures, sometimes in Malaysia, I say they put a durian on the end of the stick. Or I don't know what you like, but maybe a dumpling or something. But anyhow, suppose, what's your favourite food? Ice cream. I'm like, that won't work. It'll melt. But a what? Pineapple bun. Okay. So you tie a pineapple bun on top of the end of the string. Now, because that donkey was born and raised in Hong Kong, when that donkey sees pineapple bun, whoa, that looks lovely. Very nice. So what does donkey do? Donkey moves towards the pineapple bun. The stick moves, the string moves, and so does the pineapple bun move. So even though the donkey runs fast as it can after the pineapple bun, the pineapple bun always 2 foot in front of its mouth. Can never get there. But the donkey, he learns about meditation and kindness. And you know what the donkey does? The donkey's been running all its life after the pineapple bun. So the donkey stops. Stops and relaxes to the max. And what happens to the pineapple bun? It goes further away and further and further away. Now pineapple bun 4 foot in front of donkey's mouth. But now the donkey notices something very strange. Now pineapple bun, it swings right away from the mouth. Now it starts swinging back to donkey's mouth. And soon it's right where it usually is, 2 foot in front of its mouth, but now travelling at top speed towards donkey's mouth. And the donkey just sits there or stands there and doesn't move until just at the very right moment when the pineapple bun is just close to its mouth, it remembers the last piece of important advice. He looks at that pineapple bun and says, "Pineapple bun, the door of my mouth is open to you." Otherwise, the pineapple bun bounces off its teeth. It misses it. So that's how we get nirvana. You chase it, and it's always in front of you. But you can't reach it. You stop. And then the pineapple bun swings towards you. And a little bit of kindness at the last moment, and you've got pineapple bun. So that's how. Oh, you've got some tissues. Do you want some tissues? No, they're free. No extra charge. Yeah. So the tissues come to you. You don't need to. And open the door of your nose. And let it come out. So anyway, that's how we use the donkey and the carrot. But now, the Emperor's Three Questions, which is the story which you probably have heard before. I've been teaching it for so many years. Found it first when I was at university. And I was in 1970, I think, I read this book by Leo Tolstoy, and included in there the Emperor's Three Questions. In brief, Emperor had it up to here with organized religion. Always saying, "We are the best." And everyone said, no, we are the best. So sometimes, no, we're more superior than you. That's why, you know, as a Buddhist monk, sometimes we have the three traditions in Buddhism. We have Hinayana, Mahayana, Vajrayana. So you know what I do? Try and bring them all together. And then we have the H from Hinayana. The next three letters, A-H-A, from Mahayana. And then the Yana from Vajrayana. And what does that smell? H plus A-H-A plus Y-A-N-A. Hahayana. Hahayana. So that's my tradition. Hahayana. Bring people together. But anyway, so the Emperor's Three Questions. You know, sometimes people argue who's the best, who's the worst, whatever. So the Emperor decided, I am going to make my own religion. It has to be practical and simple. Something you can put into practice no matter where you are, no matter what you're doing, no matter what job you have to do. So in the end, after a long story, the Emperor found all the philosophy you ever need. Just as the answer to three questions. And the first question was, when is the most important time? Who is the most important person? And what is the most important thing to do? Very simple. First question, when is the most important time? Now really, you sure? So, when is the most important time to meditate? When is the worst time to meditate? Later. That's always the worst time. When is the best time to say sorry? Now, when is the worst time? Again, later. That never happens. And say someone, to tell them how much you care for them, how much you love them? When? When should you say that? Okay. Go on, say it. To your partner, your best friend, or whatever. So, and the only time is now. That was an obvious one. The next question was, who is the most important person? If you heard this before, don't spoil it, please. Who do you think is the most important person? Yourself? People think that? Do you think that? Put your hand up if you think that's the correct answer. Which it's not, obviously. Who's the most important person? It's not yourself. The right answer was a powerful answer. It was the one right in front of you, whoever that happens to be. Have you ever been to talking to some lecturer or professor, some teacher in this university? You go up to them and they're not listening to you. They're trying to get rid of you. They've got better things to do, it seems. You've gone home after work, and you know, you go and talk to your partner. You say, "Darling, I'll talk to you later." How does that feel? That feels that you're not important anymore. Your kids, you're tired, you've been busy all day, and you go home, and you go, Mummy, I'm just I'm busy. They feel that they're not important to you anymore. So sometimes, but I really am busy, said, but you're never too busy to be with the person in front of you, wherever that happens to be. So actually, you're the most important person in the world to me right now. But it won't last. Now you are. And now you are. And a lot of the times, when I go to bed at night, I'm the last person I see. So I always say good night to myself. Have a wonderful evening. A wonderful sleep, Ajahn. See you in the morning. Bye. And I'm also kind to myself. Good morning, Ajahn Brahm. Have a wonderful day. Nice to see you again. I actually do that. It's not craziness. It's realizing a lot of my life is spent just with myself. And if you're kind to yourself and care for yourself, great things happen. So what's that got to do with meditation? I close my eyes. What's the most important meditation object in the world? What should I be aware of? Whatever's in front of my mind right now, whatever the mindfulness is presenting to me, that is the most important thing I should be watching. And amazing things happen. Now I'm actually engaging with this moment. I'm not choosing and selecting. I don't want to think about that. That's too painful. That's too anxious. And it's not, I've been told I should be watching this, I should be watching that. Well, come on. Whatever's in front of you right now is the most important thing in the whole world. So that's number two question answered. In meditation, the most important thing to be observant of is whatever it is in front of you right in this moment. And the last question, what's the most important thing to do? And I've taught this before in this room here. What's the main purpose of working in a hospital? Of being a surgeon, a counselor, a therapist, an anaesthetist, or whatever your role is. What's the most important job for a person working in the hospital? Is it to cure people? No. If you think you're going to try and cure people in this facility or any other facility, you're going to be disappointed many times in your life. Sometimes you can't do it. Even if you can overcome a tumor or a disease, it's only temporary. Sooner or later, something else is going to kill them, as is going to kill you. And the most important thing is not to cure people. It's to care for people. This is a caring profession. At least it should be. But sometimes you are forced by the culture, by the bosses, even by legalities, to cure at all costs. The real job is to care for people. If you make caring your most important priority in your career, you will find, you will feel a failure many times. Be very disappointed. If you make caring the most important priority, to care for the people who are with you, then you'll find you never need to fail. You can always care, but you can't always cure. And if you care for somebody at their bedside when they're going through pain, they're going through trauma, they're going through even the death process, if you care for them, instead of trying to find some way to keep death at bay for a few extra months or years, caring for them is a totally different process. These are people who are afraid, who are vulnerable. So how can I cure you? Care for them first. Make sure they feel safe, cared for, loved, and that you are not trying to get rid of their illnesses as much as trying to care for them. And you'll find, number one, you never feel a failure. And number two, if the death happens, they and the family will all die. So they will die, and the family know they've been cared for. They've been cared for so much, it makes a huge difference in their experience at hospitals and other facilities. They feel they're cared for. And if you can do things like that, you'll find you get far greater success rate in your procedures. Many more people will walk out of the hospital alive. Because caring is always more important than curing. So, it's more than that. It's caring, obviously, for one another in a hospital. So getting rid of the problems or the problem makers. Sometimes we have pest control. You know what pest control is? Getting rid of a toxic husband. There's no such thing as toxic people, by the way, as I said this morning. But sometimes we have this idea, just get rid of it. And sometimes that tightness, tension doesn't work. So kindness. So what to do? The most important thing in the world is now. So the most important time is now. The most important thing is what's right in front of you. And the most important thing to do is to care. Care for this moment. You don't know what it's trying to teach you. You don't know what you have to learn from this moment. It could be an ache. It could be a pain. It could be a great disappointment in life. We think, why me? Why does this have to happen at this time to me? But it's here. So, it's the most important thing in the world for you. Care for it. Be kind to it. And then see what happens. You find that is a powerful way of overcoming diseases and problems. In the interval, somebody asked me about some latest ideas that your gut health affects your psychological happiness as well. If you've got bad guts, if you have the wrong bacteria in your tummy, then that's a contributing factor for your mental health. But is it? Always challenge. I love challenging. Of course, you all know that I was a theoretical physicist before, so I know about science. I know its strengths and its weaknesses. But I also like challenging. So I always notice that if you do have an indigestion or any sort of irritable bowel syndrome, never ever follow your gut feeling. You get angry at others. But what I also know is that experience, real experience, and it's good to tell this tale right now, because this is the first session after lunch. And always remember, the first session after lunch in conferences and other presentations is always called the graveyard talk. This is the time when people fall asleep. It's just you're digesting your food. So, when I was, only about 3 years ago, I had food poisoning. Because a lot of times you go on arms round, people bring food to you, say, oh, you must eat this, you must eat that, you must eat something else. And so you do. I don't know where it comes from. And every now and again you get some indigestion. Pretty good at the moment, but this time was food poisoning. You know what food poisoning is like? You just sit there, ah! Because you have these cramps. It was, ah! And I was in my cave, where I live in Perth. How many of you have been to monastery in Australia and seen my cave? Wow, it's amazing how many of you have. It's the biggest tourist attraction in Australia. Anyway, I live like soundproof, so it doesn't matter how many, which I go, no one could hear me. And it was totally involuntary, as those of you who know about how the body works, you have these contractions in your, these stomach cramps, and they're really painful. And that's the reason why I keep going, because then it wakes everybody else. I can see everyone looking at me now. It works. So, you know, if you're ever giving a talk about gut health, please do that. You know, just I met this crazy mic and went, It gets people's attention anyway. So, here I was. It was a long way from the town. So if I could manage to crawl to the nearest phone, by the time the ambulance came, I'd be dead. That was not an option. So, what to do? And it was just as I was telling you, now's the most important time. The most important thing was one right in front of you, which was these stomach cramps, the agony of, you know, the contractions in the bowel or the intestines, wherever it was. That was the pain. What's the most important thing to do? Not to cure it. If I was curing it, I'd get more tight, more tense, and it would get worse. So instead, I was kind to it. Embraced it. Let it be. And learned from it. Somehow or other, that experience was to teach me something. And I paid attention to my lesson. So as I was just being with it, being kind to it, when you're kind, you tend to relax. So I was actually relaxing my intestines, or bowels, I forget which part it was. Relaxed it. You know what I noticed then? From the mindfulness gives you feedback. That the pain was only a tiny bit, maybe 1% less intense pain. So I relaxed it a bit more. Another 1%. Relaxed it a bit more. Even more, less pain. It took me about 20 minutes. Honestly, that's all. Sitting in my cave, just relaxing my guts, relaxing my guts, relaxing my guts. Paying full attention, giving it importance, and being kind. And after 20 minutes, no more pain, no more contractions. No more pain at all. My gut was back to normal health. At least that's what it felt like. It was just like normal. So what that taught me is how powerful and unexpected this being in the moment, being kind, and just being with whatever's happening, rather than trying to get rid of it. And of course, I've taught that to many other people. For me, the mind, that's what I'm really strong at, just how your mind works and how it interacts with your physical body, and just how much you can do. As long as you do it properly. If you try and get rid of these problems, that just makes you more tight, more tense. But if you learn how to relax with kindness, you find that the things, they disappear, they heal, they go. So how do we do that? Just with a simple meditation. Now's the most important time. The experience of feeling you're with is important. Don't try to get rid of it. Don't try and find a place where you can be safe and free from that terrible experience of pain. And then give this beautiful kindness and acceptance. You'll find then, sometimes you get some amazing things happen. It's called the Emperor's Three Questions meditation. Just now's the most important time. Whatever you're with is important. You can always be kind. Open the door of your heart, let this in be, and learn from it. So that is the meditation which I promised I would do a guided meditation on for everybody here. But before I do, any comments or questions about that? I didn't know that just, you know, because I studied a little bit of biology, and I had seen a bacteria before, I didn't know which one was which. But I always wondered, what would happen? Where did those bacteria go? Because the bacteria infection. So there they were 1 minute, and I never took any antibiotics, or I didn't evacuate my bowels or anything. They were just, what happened? And afterwards I imagined just the bacteria in my tummy, which were multiplying and causing havoc in there. I imagined like a little blob with all these tentacles coming off it. I imagine all these little blobs, all their tentacles, were crossed in full lotus, meditating quietly in my digestive tract. And that's what happened to my bacteria. They learned how to make peace and be kind, and they too were enjoying the peaceful meditation. I don't know if that could have been true, but certainly there was no sort of recurrence of the pain or anything. Then my guts were totally in order again after 20 minutes. It's pretty good response time. So, yeah. Exactly, no. So, you know, the breath, you don't always have to do the breath meditation. Just especially this time, sometimes you know that you're tired. If you try and watch your breath, you're fast asleep. No, you can't notice the breath, everyone else can. And sometimes you've got aches and pains. Obviously, you try to adjust your body so it's comfortable. So you don't need to sit up rigidly straight or on a chair. That just really just, if anything annoys me, that does, that people say to get deep meditation, you have to sit in a certain posture. And people get afraid of meditating. Or when the master comes around with a stick. Of course they get scared. No one wants to come and do that. And just, so that sort of stuff turns more people off meditation. It's not discipline, it's wisdom, kindness. That is how this meditation path works. Not more fear, but actually just peace and kindness. So, what happens is, say you're really sick in the deathbed. People say, oh, well, I can't meditate, I can't watch my breath. Because maybe you're not even breathing, maybe you have to have some oxygen mask on or something. But you can always meditate if you know how to be in this moment. Whatever's happening right now is the most important thing in the whole world. And just be kind. You can always meditate. And my goodness, it works. So don't choose the object. If the breath comes up, fine. If it doesn't, fine. You're always aware of something. What is it? The one right in front of me right now, which is you. But not for too long. So if anyone is really, really sick and in pain, and they find that they say, well, I can't do mindfulness, it hurts too much, or I, you know, can't do breath meditation or any other type of meditation because they're sick, they're weak, they can't sit on the floor, whatever, for goodness sake, tell them to be kind to their body, and then just whatever you're aware of right now, focus on and be kind to it and then see what happens. Very, very powerful. Another question before we start? Okay, let's do some of the guided meditation. Shall we do 25 minutes this time? Okay, so first of all, stand up and stretch. That's why I really encourage greasy food. So it oils your joints. Okay. I'm only joking about that. Don't quote me in the health journals. You know, you see that I've got a lot of gravitas. When I went through the customs at New York, or was it? No, it was New York. Because they didn't know I was a Buddhist monk. They said, what have you got under your robes? Is that a suicide belt? And my answer to them, no, it's only fat. And they said, same thing. Thank you. I don't know if you've gone through the customs and stuff, but not this time, but the last time I was travelling at Perth Airport, they should know me by now. They asked if what I had in my bag, did I have any hair gel in my bag? And I couldn't stop laughing after that. Okay. You know, sometimes there's a reason which I tell jokes, especially just before meditation, to get the happiness up, the joy. It engages. You're not afraid of meditation or mindfulness or peace. And the path of peace and kindness is a happy path. And other people get attracted. You want to do more because it's joyful. So anyway, here we are, sitting in this old body of mine or yours or whatever. Always just spend a few moments just settling in. I always take that example of a dog. You know, when a dog goes to sleep, it goes round and round. If it's got some cushions or some blankets, it goes round and round and round. Until it, I don't know why it keeps going around in circles inside its little basket, but it does that until it gets just the right posture, the right place. It doesn't just crash like human beings do. It just goes around and finds a nice quiet place and sits down. Well, like sometimes like cats, they knead, you know, with the K-E-N-A-D, with their paws. You know, if they sit on your lap, they knead your lap, push it until it's nice and soft. That's what they're trying to do anyway. So you just get yourself in the most comfortable position you possibly can. Here, this is what the two recordings. And that when you are reasonably comfortable, what are you aware of right now? I really mean now. Because the most important time, the only time you'll ever have in your life, is right now. Whatever you try and recall from the past, you can only gain fragments of it. And the way you look at it, the past, is always bent, distorted, just by your present experience. The past is unreliable. What you believe happened, what you're convinced that happened, is not always true. But no one can know that. As for the future, now this moment is where your future is made. Right now is the only time you'll ever have to do something positive for your future. And this moment will later on become your memory, will become your past. So too, create the best possible future for yourself and others. We put attention in this moment, the present, the place where the future is made. And if we look after and care for this present moment, we do the very best we can for our future. So now is the most important time, the only time you ever have. when people say they're busy, they've got no time. It literally means that they're not here. Always in the past or the future. So right now is the only time we ever have. Now. So please value this. It's an endangered species, the present moment. Always called up, pulled away somewhere else. So we're here. What are you aware of right now? Sound of the fans? Sound of my voice? Feeling in your buttocks pressed against the chair or the floor? Aches, pains in your body? Diseases, fevers, tumors, tiredness, whatever comes to your mind, respect it. Don't diminish its importance because it's something you haven't been taught about before, so it can't be right. Let go of all that nonsense called your learning and dogma. This moment is the most important. Its contents are invaluable. That's why they're here. How should you respond? The most important thing, the relationship that you have to this experience. Be kind. If a thought does come from the past, it's traveled all that way, now it's here in this present moment. So respect it, don't try and get rid of it or fault find. When you're aware of your past, it's now become the present. You don't believe it, but you respect it. You're with this moment and you're kind to it. It's like a visitor has come in to your mind and you look after them. Be kind. You'll find they don't stay forever. When you try and get rid of them, they stay forever. And you're kind to them, they soon leave, having finished what they needed to teach you. So you're kind to this moment. And if you cough, please, you're most welcome to cough. I don't mean that sarcastically, I really mean that. Sometimes that we feel that, oh, I'm coughing, I'm going to disturb others. You're not. It's not the sound disturbs you, taught Ajahn Chah, it's we who disturb the sound, the nature. So whenever you need to cough, any of you, you're most welcome, you're invited. I did that just to meditate, by example. And if you're hearing the sound of the cough, it becomes the most important thing in the whole world. So be with it. Be kind. And you discover that sounds, which once you called disturbances, are now looked at in another way. They're here to teach. They're here to show you that you can't control this world, not much of it, but certainly you can be with it and be kind, be compassionate. when I ask to be aware of what's ever happening now. You don't need to give things names or to understand, like through dictionary definitions, what this is. I did learn as part of my astronomy the names of stars, planets, first of all, stars, galaxies nearby. But then I found they stopped me appreciating the beauty of the stars at night. What I could see is the names. It took me years, but I managed to deliberately forget those names. So now I can look at the night sky, especially in a place like Australia, without knowing the names, I still appreciate their beauty. Probably even more so. So now it's important. Be kind. Opening the door of your heart with unconditional loving kindness and mindfulness. Like in any class or lecture, the student, the recipient, keeps quiet. Here you're listening to nature, to your mind, to your body, to whatever happens right now. And this is the only time you ever have. When you're experiencing what you are aware of right now is by far the most important thing in the whole world. And the only thing to do is to be kind to your teachers. Your teachers of being. What's in your mind right now? I'm going to be quiet for a few moments, but remember, this is a meditation. Now, what's in front of you is important. And kindness.
and what's happening now. What's in the front of your mind? What experience have you in this moment? Embrace it. Opening the door of your heart to this moment. If it's a thought, it's not your thought. You don't own it. Where it comes from, you can never know. Where it goes to, you can't follow. The wind is only known when it meets your face. Thoughts experiences life. You only really know it when it's here. And it leaves you. Now is the most important time. And it's here. Life. Be a friend to it. It's important. It may not be what you like or what you expect. But it's here. Be kind. Now when you're ready, just open your eyes. But don't move yet. With your eyes open, carry on meditating. Just be here. This moment is unique. Give this moment importance. Be kind. Okay. That's the end of this little meditation. I always prefer sitting down on the ground. I often thought it'd be great if we could have aircraft with no seats, just cushions on the ground, so we could meditate all the way through where we're going. And because you can see, it's only just half the space. So just in an ordinary aircraft, small one, we get two layers. Would that be a good idea? It's much more stable than sitting on the ground and sitting in chairs, so you won't need to wear any seat belts. Your centre of gravity is way down here, so you're much more stable. Think that would work? I don't know. But anyway, oh yes, some questions. Well, how was the meditation, first of all? Did anyone fall asleep? Do you feel bad about that? Be kind. You fell asleep because why? Because you were tired. So don't fight. Be kind. That's the example of what kindness is. We had this, I often cite this case, a person who, they came to a meditation class, my meditation class in Australia some years ago. We could do half an hour. People look forward to that. And she lay, I'd never seen her before. She lay down in the room and fell fast asleep. And so somebody sort of nudged her to wake her up. And it was only afterwards that I told everybody that lady, she'd managed to talk to me just before she came in, but I didn't make an announcement that she was a victim of quite serious and painful domestic abuse. She She hadn't slept for days. She was afraid of her partner. And now she came to a place which intuitively she thought was safe. And so she just lay down and fell asleep, because she felt she could. And I mentioned that sometimes you can be so judgmental. You're not supposed to do this in a Buddhist temple or in a meditation. You're supposed to behave, you're supposed to do this, you're supposed to do that. Which is nice, you know, to be respectful, but also be kind. So at least everyone learned from that. So next time anyone lay down and fell asleep, give them a pillow. Tuck them in. Whatever. That kindness is so essential. Now's the most important time. You're with this moment. You learn from it. And you're kind. So that means that people feel welcome, and who knows, one day that may be you. Needs to come to some refuge. You lay down, go to sleep. Please, have a nice place you can go to sleep. Oh, that story in one of my books, which I got from someone. There was a, I think it was over in one of the suburbs of Los Angeles or San Francisco or somewhere. The woman of the house, she just got all the weekly shopping, had her arms all full of shopping bags. As she opened her, you know, just getting the keys out and just putting them in the door. And as she was opening the door, a dog ran past her, went into her house. And she couldn't stop it. Her hands were full. So, you know, she closed the door with her feet and just put all the shopping on the kitchen table and went to try and find out where this stray dog had come from, where it was. And she found out it wasn't a stray dog. It was clean and well-groomed. It was a big Labrador. It was a lovely little dog. And it was curled up in the corner of her house, fast asleep. And she took one look at it and said, well, I don't know where this comes from, but it's a beautiful dog. It's just fast asleep. So why wake it? So she left the dog in the corner of this room and went to unpack her things. And then the dog was still fast asleep, curled up. So she left it there for about a couple of hours. And when the dog woke up, it came to see her, she let it out, and off it trotted away. And the whole episode was just really quite strange. Where did this dog come from? What did it do? But anyway, it came the next day around the same time. She let it in, and it quietly, it was a clean dog, very well behaved, just wanted a quiet place to lay down and rest. But after 4 or 5 days, she got curious. Why did this dog come to her house? So, the dog never had an email address. But it did have a collar. So what she did, she wrote a little note on a piece of paper saying something like, I don't know where this dog belongs, who owns it. It's obviously a very lovely dog, very well behaved and clean, but it's been coming to my house every afternoon between sort of, you know, 2 and 4. I'm just curious. It's quite welcome. It can come back any time it wants. But I just wondered where it comes from and why it comes to my house. She tucked it under the collar. And the next day when the dog came back, had an answer. A different piece of paper. And she read it. What it said was, this is my dog, said the owner. And it said, I live just a couple of blocks away. And my dog comes to your house because in our house I've got a wife and about 6 kids, and the kids are very young and they're so noisy and they just make a racket in the house, always teasing and playing with the dog. My dog comes to your house for peace and quiet. Can I come too? Said the husband. And that's a nice little story. Just even dogs, they want a piece of peace and quiet, that's all. It may not be even your dog. But that's all it wanted. Just like everyone else, just a bit of calmness and quietness, a place to rest. Anyway, dear Adhaya, what is the main difference between Buddhism and Hinduism? Thank you. And it's the spelling. Hinduism comes with a H. What's the difference between spaghetti and what was it called, pineapple buns. What was the difference? She said, well, yeah, it's only just same, just really when you look at it, it's just food, that's all. What's the difference between a... Well, look, some people were saying about why is it that... Well, I can't believe, you know, I was talking, am I Asian or am I Western or where do I belong? Of course, I look around this room and all I see is Asians. East Asians, South Asians, Caucasians. We're all Asians. Why do you make all these differences? So, between Buddhism and Hinduism, my name. You know what it means, Ajahn Brahm? Ajahn is like, you know, word for teacher. But Brahm is the most important part. And that is B for Buddhist, R for Roman Catholic, A for Anglican, H for Hindu, and M for Muslim. Brahm. It's just, if you're Jewish, I do apologize. So sometimes, isn't it good to stop making distinctions? So anyway, of course people get on my case and say, no, Ajahn Brahm, Buddhism is this, Hinduism is that, Christianity is something else. Is it? What is a Buddhist? What is a Hindu? What is a Christian? What is an atheist? We can fight for one side or another. We don't exactly know what we're fighting for. It's a whole idea of these different paths to separate people. Or to say, I am better than somebody else. All that sort of stuff doesn't make any sense to me. Anyway, I was told that whatever good deeds you received, you have to repay it. Is this true? Good deeds you receive, you have to repay it? Of course it's not. Otherwise, I've received so many good deeds from so many people, and I've got no money. I'd be bankrupt if I have to pay all the good deeds I've received. No, of course you don't. If you think you do, then maybe. But like giving. Giving is always expecting nothing back in return. That's what real giving is. Just give it for the fun of it. Did you enjoy giving? Do you get energy from giving? This, because this is behavioral health. I suppose to say something about behavioral health. So you don't lose your job. But it is true that volunteering, giving, is an amazing way of overcoming depression. It's simply because if you're so depressed, even just suicidal, or just, you know, really having a hard time in life, sometimes one thinks one's worth is very low. You go out and be with other people, you feel you're making a contribution to life. You feel good about life. You're actually doing something. Oh, wow. There was another teacher a long time ago who was teaching me. That was the old, well, big Western monk, Ajahn Sumedho. And I was looking after him once when he was teaching a retreat. And this lady came in and she said, I don't need any advice on meditation. I just want to say thank you for saving my life. That's what she said to this big teacher. And straight away, I was half asleep. And then I just woke up because she said it with sincerity. This guy had said something, this monk had said something which had changed a person's life and saved it. From that time on, I always made a resolution. If that ever happens to me, just once, then my whole life would be worth it. No matter however long I live. If that ever happened to you, I'm sure it has many times, someone's come and said, thank you for being here. Thank you for being here for me. Without you, I would not be here. You saved my life. If that's happened to you, your life has already had its meaning fulfilled. And everything else is extra. He's doing post-grad. getting another double degree, triple degree, quadruple degree. Because you actually feel you've actually achieved something in life. You may not be well known. You may not get your face on the front cover of magazines. But you know that you've helped somebody, which is amazing. So that's where we give. Not expecting to get anything back. Where we get much more than we ever expected. When you give and be kind to someone. When that happens to you, and you really help someone, please keep that in your heart. Remember that. Don't remember all your failures and all the terrible things which have happened to you. Just one person. You've been there for them. You took them through a terrible time. You were there for them. And sometimes you don't know what you said or what you did, but it worked. Well done. And then when that happens, of course, whoa, that's just better than any drug, better than any alcohol, better than anything. You've meant something to somebody. Your meaning has already been fulfilled. And from now on, everything else is just extra. Let's still go for extra. You say one person, just get the number two, number three, number four, number five, nothing. It's just a privilege. You mentioned that you helped some refugees with mindfulness. What are the dangers for the trauma they experience to become worse? How can we but support the most vulnerable through mindfulness? This is just, again, just saving one or two. At least that's something. Maybe you can do some more later on. But many people get frustrated and they give up because the problem is too big for them. Think, how can I ever achieve this? Well, there's one of the stories, this was actually from, I don't know if I can say Buddhist texts, but anyway, it's just, there's an old story which really inspired me of the quail. There's a little bird, the tiniest of birds, who was in a bushfire a long time ago. And this little bird, like everybody else, when they saw the fire become unstoppable, they flew away to save their lives. They ran away, but this little quail stopped because there was some little chick still in the egg who couldn't fly yet. And there were some animals who couldn't walk yet. And those who could crawl could never crawl fast enough to outrun the fire. They were going to die. And this little quail thought, no one is doing anything. Why can't I do something? So this crazy little quail went to the nearest pond, wet its feathers with water, and then climbed up into the air and flew over the fire, shaking its little wings so maybe one or two little drops would hit the ground. If they even did, because they'd probably evaporate before, but at least it was trying. He's trying to do something. Irrational, illogical, but it was giving it a try. And he kept doing this again and again. Wasn't stopping the fire, of course. But other beings saw that the little quail was not just thinking of itself, was trying to help others. And then they say this, you know, this is traditional stuff. The heavenly beings got just so embarrassed that even the little quail was helping and they weren't. Powerful people came to the rescue and they made this big thunderstorm which stopped all of the fire and just saved all those limitless beings. Just one little person doing impossible acts, crazy acts, irrational acts, but out of sheer kindness. Works. I've seen that in my life. A person goes to the help, it's impossible. But they do that, and other people say, well, I'll try as well. And another person. So you get so many people helping, they stop terrible things happening. All starts out from one stupid person. That's what the world calls them, stupid. But they set an example, and everyone else follows. So sometimes there's things like that which I've seen in my life. The simile of the quail. seemingly of the smallest, most ineffective little bird. But nevertheless, we think about others and try and save everybody. Just with tiny drops of water. Okay, most of us do recognize the benefits of being mindful and being kind, but sometimes we just choose not to, for example. After a whole day of work, you may choose binge eating or watching TV drama rather than spending some time with ourselves in meditation. Do you have any good ideas to help us overcome these temptations? Don't be so unkind to yourself, number one. Remember, what is meditation? The Emperor's Three Questions. Now is the most important time, so find out what's on the TV right now. The TV drama right in front of you is the most important TV drama in the whole world. And just be kind. You think that's giving in, but it's not. With addictions and negativity, obviously the first thing is that we don't feel that we're powerful enough or good enough. We don't deserve to be peaceful. And that's where addictions mostly come from, from self-hatred, self-doubt, not feeling good enough. And just to learn how to just... you're watching a TV drama. Never mind. You're binge eating. We'll make sure it's healthy binges. Whatever. But sometimes, again, if you make it worse, you're doing this to punish yourself, to teach yourself a lesson. Sometimes that's what it is. You don't deserve to be healthy. Try something different. So, okay, come on. Well, you've been cheating today. Can I come too? Whatever. This is actually trying something which is counterintuitive, but my goodness works. Be kind to one another. And then you find you love meditating. To me, meditating is better than binge eating. It's binge meditating. So try binge meditating. You know, the best movie is the movie inside. Whatever's happening right now. You are wise, you reckon? What it says here. I learned a lot from you and you helped me solve many problems in life. Thank you very much. But is there any difficulty you can yet to overcome? How do you deal with it? Well, there's heaps of difficulties you don't overcome. And such difficulties which you don't overcome, you don't worry about it. It's not overcoming difficulties. It's learning from them, being with them. It's not about making a heaven on earth. If there was a heaven on earth, would it be worth being reborn here? You wouldn't learn anything. You wouldn't grow. The challenges of life, and they're painful, but we call them growing pains. Real difficulties, someone once described them as a flower in bud. Can you imagine a flower? The bud, it gets swells bigger and bigger and bigger. Inside that bud, there is these petals just growing and growing, about to burst forth. You can feel the pressure and the pain to something, and then it bursts and these beautiful flowers come out. That's the only simile I can give you, because I've never given birth to a child. But some of you know have given birth, you know what it must be like. You know, just something growing inside of you, getting bigger and bigger and bigger, painful, but then burst forth. You know, this amazing being has just come out from you. Not the same, not different. But now you've got to care for that for years. How do you feel about that?
Yeah.
But something beautiful comes out. There's sometimes some problems. Leave them alone. Problems are fertilizer. Problems are growth. Without some of those problems, how can we learn? So, sometimes problems are wonderful things where we grow in our world. Puts us in our place, teaches us how little we know. But every now and again we find solutions to intractable problems. And that's inspiring. It does give us hope. Don't ever think this life will be without problems. No more than if you are in a partnership. Don't ever think that you'll ever have no problems with your partner. Is that real? Anyone here has never had any problems with a partner? It's like thinking that you can have a body which is always healthy. Of course you get sick. There's nothing wrong with being sick. It's part of our world, part of our body, part of our life. And from those sicknesses and from those problems which you share in your relationship, that is where growth comes. Don't hide it. Pretend it doesn't exist. The problems are where we grow. Say, Ajahn Brahm, you don't understand. Yes, I do. There was a little conference I gave for the clients of the mental health system in Australia. And I taught them about the simile of the forest. I tell this every year, I'm sure. It's one of my favorite similes. Simile of the forest. These were people who'd been through some terrible emotional injuries in their life. They could have been diagnosed with all sorts of stuff, treated very harshly. But these people who I was talking with, I told them, if you want to understand what's going on, go into the forest. Walk around until you find your favorite tree, the one which you find really beautiful, the one you'd always like to go back there again and again, the one you'd like to have your photograph taken with. And come and tell me what type of tree it is. And I asked them, is it a perfect tree? One which is dead straight, no damage on the bark or the trunk, all the limbs in place, no diseased leaves. So can't even find one of those. Maybe you can find them on the front cover of glossy magazines, just like you can find these supermodels on glossy magazine covers. But such people don't exist. You know, one of my friends went to a retreat with Kate Moss. She's a supermodel, apparently. When she found out Kate Moss was on this retreat, wow. And she looked around to see which one it was. The reason I tell the story, he couldn't spot her. She looked exactly the same as every other girl on that retreat. Because a supermodel does not exist in real life. It is just this beautiful canvas which the makeup artist and the lighter and the photographer and the airbrusher, they can make into this fantastical creature. It's just the light, the airbrush, the makeup, the clothes, that's all it is. The real person you'll never notice. It's fantasy. But anyway, that the tree, there's no such thing as a perfect tree. You try and find one anywhere. But we always think that that's what we should aspire for. Something which never exists. But the beauty, the beautiful tree, what's that? That's the one which is all twisted and bent and crooked and got damage all over the bark. That's the beautiful one. So then I said to the people who had been stigmatized by their illnesses, by their emotional traumas, I said, look, go to a forest, find the perfect tree, and then find the most beautiful tree. You'll understand that each one of you No matter who you are, how you are, how bent, twisted, how damaged you are, you all belong. You all belong to this wonderful forest called humanity. And number two, just like the most beautiful tree is the twisted and damaged ones. But if you're damaged, you're my favorite tree. And other people's favorite trees as well. Don't be stigmatized or feel diminished because of what people said you are. You belong. And you're some of the most beautiful people. When I said, I'll say what happened next is one of these middle-aged Australian women came out afterwards and they said, I've got to apologize to you, Ajahn Brahm. I said, well, what do you do? I turned around to my friend and as soon as she came in, this Buddhist monk who probably doesn't know anything about how we feel, he said, I thought, please excuse me, who is this W-A-N-K-E-R? It's a British term. If you want to know what it is, ask some of the people brought up in England. Who is this W-A-N-K-E-R coming to teach us? And then she came back and said, I apologize. But hey, don't mind, I don't know what that means. But, you know, you made her weep. Because she understood all those years of trying to think that she doesn't belong. To think that she's somehow less. She can't just be herself and realize that she is beautiful. One of the most beautiful trees in the forest. When she got that, oh, I'm sorry, I have to go and apologize to him for thinking it doesn't matter. But anyway, this is how we can learn to accept. There's no such thing as damaged goods. I don't think so. It's just beautiful stuff. Can I do two more questions and then, I don't know what we do next anyway. How can I stop being angry and blaming myself? Sometimes people get into these habits. So there's this trainee monk years ago in Australia who came up to me and said, I've done a terrible thing. So what have you done? And he said, because I was the boss monk at the place at the time. And he said, oh, I know, I'm supposed to keep my precepts, but I couldn't sleep all night. What have you done? Last night I was hungry. And I crept into the kitchen in the middle of the night and I made myself a sandwich and I ate it. This poor person was traumatized by eating a sandwich. And I said, look, it's against the precepts when you're a monk to eat a sandwich in the evening. But, look, there's many other things you can do. Eat more at lunchtime. You know, you can have, you know, there are all these little things we can eat in the evening as Theravada monks. Have some honey or whatever. I gave him all these lists of things which you can eat in the evening. Okay, so if you feel hungry, don't eat those things. And eat more at lunchtime. So you don't have to, you know, eat in the evening, which is one of our little rules. He said, oh, yeah, I never thought of that, but aren't you going to punish me? He said, punish you? Why? He said, well, he said, if you don't punish me, I'll almost certainly do the same the next day. You know, some people are like that. So they demand punishment. Otherwise, they think that's the only way they can be disciplined. It's how they grow up sometimes. So put me on the spot. I said, how can I deal with a person like this? So thinking on the spot, I said, well, I was just reading a book that morning about the history of Australia. And that when the first convicts went to Australia, if they did the slightest thing wrong, they'd be whipped with this really brutal instrument called the Cat of Nine Tails. Have you heard about that? Cat of Nine Tails? Oof. And I've just been reading about the punishments which were meted out in the history book that morning. And I said, well, okay, you know, you're Australian, this guy. And I said, I'll give you a typical traditional Australian punishment. 50 strokes of the cat. Oh, you should have seen this fella. All the blood drained from his face. He went white and the lips started quivering. You know, he was so strange, he actually thought that, you know, you could whip someone in a Buddhist monastery. But then I explained to him what 50 strokes of the cat meant. I said, at the time we had two cats. Find either one of them and stroke them 50 times. One, two, three. And that was my 50 strokes of the cat. So they're really naughty. The next time I do 100 strokes of the cat. One, two, maybe put it on your lap. One, two. To learn some kindness. Some compassion. Instead of blaming. So people never do that. They never do. Because if you have any rules, and you don't only follow them out because of fear, fear of being caught, you always find a way out of it. I don't know in Hong Kong, but in Australia, the speed cameras, people have all these electronic devices to find out where the speed cameras are. So you know where you can speed and where you can't speed. What's the point of that? Because we think there's a danger of being caught rather than the danger of losing control of the car and hurting somebody. So punishment sometimes just makes people more sneaky to avoid being caught. Anyway, when I did meditation, sometimes my body will move. Or when I did meditation, sometimes my body will move. Should I stop the moving or let it move naturally? No, just let it move. Especially that if you're meditating and you find it moving outside and out the door. That's not what you really mean. Sometimes what we mean is sometimes we shake or we tremble or something. Please let it happen. Don't be afraid. It's coming up to some of the deep meditations now, some of the weird experiences people have with meditation. They're all very good. Examples which I've seen, many similar ones. This one lady during a meditation, I was tapped on the shoulder, so I said, you better get up, Ajahn, and have a look at this. I was leading a meditation session, and she was twisted around so extremely. If I demonstrated it now, you'd have to put me on the opposite side of the road in an ambulance somewhere, because it was so contorted. It really made me concerned about her. And then I waited for her to come out of her meditation. And then she straightened up during her meditation. I asked her afterwards, how do you feel? And she said, oh, great, wonderful. I said, but you were all twisted. I mean, really twisted. She said, was I? She knew nothing about that in her meditation. And stupid Ajahn Brahm realized what was going on. And I said, ah, yes, I should have known straight away. Where did you have your car accident? And her eyes went, wow, these monks can read minds after all. No, it's not mind reading, it's just common sense. She had a very severe car accident. Many months in hospital. Many sort of amazing doctors, physiotherapists healing her. The healing wasn't complete. And during the meditation, because she let go of control, she let these things happen. She moved in the meditation, fine, just let it happen. She twisted around so much, which allowed the body, the channels of energy, the chi, if you like, in Indian medicine, it's called the winds of the body, allow those channels to open up and do healing. The body knew exactly what to do. Anyone else, I would say, oh, that's dangerous, don't do it. And so you won't. But during the meditation, you feel safe, barriers are taken down, and you twist around, and she felt great afterwards. Enormous amount of healing happened there when she let go of controlling her body and just let it happen. so many cases like that. So if you do move during the body, fine. Just move. Although once when I was meditating, I was teaching meditation in prison. It was a top security prison, so I had to have a guard with me at all times. And of course the guy, when I was meditating, he fell asleep. And thankfully he was snoring because one of the prisoners was moving during his meditation. His hand was moving closer and closer to the keys on the officers. And it was true. When the officer, I saw that, the prisoner looked at me, I looked at the prisoner, and the officer, the prison officer, was still asleep. And the prisoner said, "Oh, okay." He moved his hands away. So he didn't want to get me into trouble. So anyway, those are some of my experiences moving in meditation. So how are you? Are there any questions back? Do you need a toilet break? No, okay. If there's pain, yes. This is where, if you have pain, how much should you move it? How should you move and adjust? Again, you'll probably find that if you've got sort of an itch or something, that's not sort of life-threatening. So just, you know, just let the itch be scratched. But if you have sort of, you want to cough like somebody did, you don't need to move out of the room. Just cough. Because you have something like in mindful exercises, meditation exercises, called the volcano effect. You know the volcano effect? That is when you plug up your nose. You say, I'm not going to sneeze. I'm not going to cough, say. You plug it up. You repress it. I'm not going to cough. Because if I cough, I'm going to disturb everybody. And the pressure builds up and builds up and builds up. It's going to blow. You can feel it's going to blow any moment now. And when it does blow, it's this huge noise. And also, you spread this very unhealthy, toxic stuff around everybody close to you. So it's better to cough straight away. Relieve the pressure and you find it's far healthier. You've got, especially if you're getting really peaceful in meditation, you've got an ache, please move. You disturb the calmness for about a minute or 2 minutes, then you come back again and you find you're much more comfortable. So it's okay to move. After a while, you get comfortable, you don't need to move. So, how are we going for time? Yeah, we've got plenty of time. Yeah. Oh, we've got plenty of time. Really? Doesn't matter. Can we go to 4? Well, people want to anyway. Yeah. So do you want to do another bit of meditation? Okay, some more meditation then. So we can stretch first of all. Hey, Gerald, are you okay? My driver? Okay. I'm happy, guys. Oh, could you move the two machines up there if you need to? Yeah, okay. Okay. It's okay. So, laying a nicely stretched. There we can sit down. So, is there any type of meditation you expected which I haven't done yet? Come on. No particular. Okay. How about loving kindness one? Okay. Okay. Yeah? Sure. good.
Okay, I would just repeat it again. I want to ask about projection of things. I feel like sometimes the unhappiness or my problems are coming from my own projection on certain things. But like, if I just see things as like they are and I just don't think about it, then I don't have feelings on it. So like, sometimes I want to stop the projection, but once I stop it, and it comes back again and then again. So do you have any ways to deal with it?
Sometimes one thing is to hang around positive people, because there's so much negative people around the world, and eventually you just pick up on the negative energy. Whereas the book called my second book was called Good, Bad, Who Knows, but there is another story in there called The Elephant Which Lost Its Happiness. And anybody who speaks Deutsch, German here, okay, because the Deutsche edition, the German edition, which really sort of took off, was the elephant that lost its happiness. And that was a story about an elephant who suddenly became a really bad elephant for no reason at all. And then they investigated and found out that behind the elephant store, there was a meeting place of these gangsters who would actually, you know, meet, plan who they were going to rob and kill and get their drug debts back from. And even though elephants could not understand human language, they could understand the negativity of the people who meet every evening behind. And so what they did, they arrested all the thieves, the bandits, and according to this Buddhist story, they taught monks and nuns to meditate behind the store. To meditate, be nice and peaceful, be kind. And then the elephant changed and became a good elephant again. And it was just noticing the fact that you do get affected by the people you live with and their attitudes and their positivity. So sometimes the way you look at things is influenced by others. So that's why people come on meditation retreats, especially if it's like with good meditating monks and nuns. So they pick up on all the monks' good energies and nuns' good energies, and they go home really, really happy. And the monks and nuns get worse and worse and worse. No. We've got all these idiots. But little by little, that's what happens. Who you hang out with, what you watch on the TVs, what you listen to. And actually just what you look for happiness in the world, you look for beauty in the world. So it is sometimes you've got a choice to look to the left or look to the right, simply. And if you look to all the negative, all the terrible things in the world, it builds up and builds up and builds up. You get anxious, you get negative, what's the point? And then you say, that's true. It's only a fraction of the truth. And you get someone to, hey, look over there. Look at all the beautiful flowers. The dust at night time causes the beautiful sunsets in the ocean. The end of a life can be the simile of like the end of a concert. The finale. It's beautiful. You never hear that music ever again. Your father, your grandfather, your grandma or something passes away. You never hear them again. What a wonderful concert that was. And how lucky you were to have been there for the whole performance. Wow. You look at things in a different way. You have the choice to look at things, the wonderful things it's given to you in this life. It couldn't give you everything. What you have is more than enough. Thank you so much. Act of gratitude and appreciation. That is where we change our attitudes. There's enough beauty, but we miss it. Kindness in this world. There's so many incredibly kind people. Really good people. And sometimes you think, Ajahn Brahm, you live in a real strange world. But if you look inside a human being, and you start, it's a Mahayana teaching or something, everyone's got Buddha natures, got purity, beauty inside. And I really subscribe to that. Seen these really monsters in jail for doing unspeakable things. You go and see them. You look at past their crimes, past their anger and the terrible things they've done. You see some beauty inside. So vulnerable, so afraid. You bring them out. And they're wonderful friends, believe it or not. People, I don't know why people do, actually I do know why they do wrong things. There's always reasons for it, fear. There's the lack of a reality check of the effect on other people. Denying it. Why do they want to do that for anyway? There's so many other wonderful ways to live a beautiful, happy life. And of course the majority of people just their relationships with one another. What was it, that story in a Malaysian professor, maths professor, asked me in public, she said, my husband, I just caught him lying this morning. I can't trust him anymore. Should I divorce him? She asked me that in public. Oh, he wasn't there. It didn't really matter because I told her a good answer. Why is it? How long have you been married? 3 years, she said. So what you, she taught maths in the university. So let's do some statistics. I know, probability theory. I had to do that. Part of science. So let's say that's 1,000 days. Yeah, just close enough. 3 years of marriage. 1,000 days you've been together. And for the sake of this argument, let's assume that your husband has spoken 20 things to you every day, on average, which could be right, which could be wrong. So over your married life together, 20,000 statements he's given to you. Now you have found out that he's done a lie to you. First time you're sure he's lying. So probability theory means that on past record, 20,000 to 1 chance the next time he opens his mouth he's telling the truth. What do you mean that can't be trusted? If ever I found a politician who only lied once every 20,000 statements, wow, that'd be amazing. But the reason I say that, why is it the one lie is all we see? And 20,000 truthful statements we just can't see. So that's where we understand that sometimes we look at just the negative part of life, not the positive. And it's actually your choice which one you want to look at. Okay, let's do some meditation now then. And this actually fits in. It's okay. Yeah, fits in a pretty good segue. Oh, you want to say something? Another? It's working okay. Okay, how long for? Is my clock down there? 15:16. Oh, we've got plenty of time. 20 minutes? Half an hour? An hour? Yay! 45 minutes. Okay. We've got 45 minutes, but it's good to keep 50 minutes at the end just to do some another question or something and do a wrap-up. Okay. So I usually only do these guided loving-kindness meditation at the end of long retreat, so let's give it a try now. So just close your eyes. If you want to, you don't have to. With your eyes closed, just become aware of your body and relax it. Sometimes I ask my body, first of all, legs, how are you? When you ask a question of a part of your body like your legs, you get an answer. It's weird. is a way of starting up mindfulness. Ask a question. Toes, how are you? Then I'm aware of my toes. You're mindful of them. It's just like a doctor asks you, how do your knees feel? But you ask that question. And you get the answer, but you don't need to put it into words. Just feel it. My butt, how's that? How are you feeling down there? If you need to be adjusted to what they call in English to fidget, please do so. It's an act of kindness. And afterwards, see if that's made your bottom more comfortable. And you go up your back. How does your back feel? Sometimes I love to stretch my back. Sitting on the floor. Again, it's my great teacher's dogs. They love to have a stretch. Other animals, even kangaroos, they stretch as well. See them enjoying a nice stretch. Then they relax. And then up to my shoulders. And often imagine my shoulders a bunch of strings pulled apart, or try to. It's called tension, stress. Something on both ends pulling at it. I let it go and relax. When I let go of both ends, just imagining it, I feel my shoulders relax. I look at my hands. My hands, according to the books, they're both supposed to be on my knees or in my lap. Unfortunately, I'm holding a microphone, so I can't do that. It doesn't matter. I find out in my circumstances, how can I make my hands as comfortable as possible? This is good enough. I'm going to give a nice yawn. Look at my throat. Sometimes has allergies. Feels really good here in Hong Kong. Shows you how good the air is here. The moment is for me anyway. And my face. My facial muscles, that is where much of the emotions are made clear to others. Angry has a certain look. Upset, revenge, fear. So by being aware of the muscles around the eyes and the mouth and the forehead, there you can understand if you're tight, afraid. So see if you can feel those muscles which describe some of the emotions. By trial and error, see if you can relax them. So your eyes are loose and free and feel comfortable. Not screwed up with anger or fear. See that the mouth, the muscles around the mouth are all relaxed. And then you're not supposed to be able to do this, but imagine you can feel your brain. Tired, exhausted, stressed, even bruised by all of the important thoughts you were supposed to find solutions from. Some people's brain is just so tired. You've had to work it so hard. So I imagine my brain and just resting it on this really soft satin cushion. Warm, comfortable, safe. Brain, take a break. It worked so hard for me. Now I give it some time off. Just imagining that just makes my brain calm down, become peaceful. Simple acts of kindness. There. I let my body go. And relax to the max. Free, delightful. And I start my loving kindness meditation. Kindness, compassion is like a fire. It needs a small flame to start it. And a small flame needs something which easily takes the fire. Just like you start a fire with a paper and a match. You can build it up from there. So because I like cats, you may choose another animal if you wish as your primary loving kindness object. I choose this little kitten because it's vulnerable, because it really needs me. You can substitute a puppy or your baby, a little rabbit, or some imaginary creature who you feel an affinity for, a natural warmth towards. I do it with a little kitten. I imagine just walking along the street somewhere, hearing this sad call of an abandoned little kitten. I can feel the pain in its voice. I can feel the hunger, the fear alongside of it. I imagine this little kitten has trusted many, but always ended up being hurt and bitten as it's receded deeper and deeper into the dark corners of this world, where it finds anonymity and safety. But no little animal, like a baby, like a little kitten, can survive in a dark corner by itself. It needs a friend, a carer, a protector. So I come past and hear very painful moans of an abandoned little kitten. I follow the cries, and I see in this dark corner a pair of eyes. That's all at first. Behind those eyes is this little being who's so alone, so hurt, without any trust. And I look into its eyes. I say, little kitten, please don't be afraid. I will never harm you. And you will never be a burden on me. It's a privilege. It's a gift for me to offer my kindness, my warmth, my food to you. I say these beautiful words of kindness. The door of my heart will always be open, little kitten, to you. I just want to see you grow safe. Be a kitten, never tell you what to do. You've been hurt already so much. And I imagine this little face coming a little bit further out from the dark, cold corners which it feels are safe. Coming out as the eye contact with the loving kindness tends to relax and give a sense of safety to this little abandoned kitten. And that allows me to hold out my hand, approaching closer and closer to this little kitten who realizes she has to trust someone. She doesn't know whether she'll be bitten and hurt again. But I keep my eye contact and my thoughts of compassion and kindness as I move my hand closer and closer. And this little kitten lets me touch her. Big fella, small, vulnerable kitten. As I feel her fur, it's not like other kittens or cats' fur. It's dirty. And I can feel the scab marks of dried blood, the bones protruding through its emaciated body. This little cat has hardly had any kindness at all in its life. Why should it trust me? But I still hold it so gently, as softly as I can, keeping eye contact. So little being, the door of my heart is wide open to you. Please let me keep you warm and safe, guard you as you grow, so I can set you free. And I hold it up in my hand and bring up this bunch of fur and bones close to my own chest, so it feels my robe, feels my heart. Hold it so gently and it trusts me. The gift of trust is very fragile at first, so I'm so careful. As I hold this little kitten, I imagine this golden light, I call it golden light, of love, of service, of wanting to be a protector, a healer, a provider for a being who's been through such pain and rejection. As I hold it, spreading this power of unconditional giving, love, kindness, compassion, this fragile being, from tail to whiskers to the ears, all over, paws, until I feel this kitten getting soft. The hardness of fear is evaporating. And I even imagine my kitten to fall fast asleep in my arms, knowing I will not harm it at all. But its future, present is painful and hungry, but its future is safe. And I hear it purring in my hands for the first time, probably. It's got a protector. More than a protector, it's got a friend. when I do that, I pause to feel, not really imaginary, but real sensations of warmth and kindness in my chest area. In that chest, above my heart, I feel a tingling, a sensation which I often associate whenever I give kindness, an unconditional warmth to something else. That's physical manifestation of kindness, care, protection. And then, to make this more powerful, I imagine another person, a real person. This could be your partner in this life, a parent who is sick and dying and weak. It could be someone who is abandoned and suffering, but someone you know. Even a person who is seemingly doing well in life. Imagine that they were right before you. And imagine that their vulnerability, their fragility, their pain, they may not show it to you, but you know, just as in that kitten, they too can feel rejected and hurt and abandoned. You imagine them and give them the same kindness as you gave that kid. My dear friend, my partner in this world, the person I love so much and care for, sometimes fight with you, but why do I do that? I don't know. But I really care for you. Imagine as if they're right in front of you. And beside that little kitten, you extend out a hand. Bring them towards you. Be kind. May you, my closest friend in this world, be at peace. Be fine. Knowing that as a friend, as a lover, I will never judge you. Like the trees in the forest, you're perfect as you are. And I care for you. Really care. You're important to me. You're part of me, my best friend. My lover, my child, my parent. We may argue and disagree. There's something which is much deeper and stronger than that. My care and kindness. As you develop this, like putting kindling wood on a fire, another person is relatively easy to bring loving kindness towards. And now, without opening your eyes, imagine all the people in this room. Some people you may know, sometimes you don't know who they are. They are like you, no different. So you send this beautiful golden light of loving kindness around the whole room, going into every person, including me, all as if one. Beautiful kindness, saying that you care. May all the people in this room be free of fear, have hope in their heart, knowing that never know where we may meet again, but we're sure we will. We can give and be kind and share. Do so much. No, we don't need to be afraid. Like bringing the little kitten out of the corner. As you put this golden energy, this light, on all as to you. May you all be free of fear. Be at peace. Never feel that you are judged. You are like the tree in the forest. Every one of you belong in each another's hearts. We care for one another. I'm not afraid to say it. This is beautiful. We call kindness. It spreads to everyone in this room. And the more you give it, the more you feel you have to give to others as to yourself. Until this power of loving kindness of unconditional caring, no matter what a person has done, not judging them, but knowing that as they feel, you feel. You've been rejected many times, afraid, criticized and hurt by others. You felt alone. But now you have each and every one of us energies to share. As we now take it wider, going out from this room to this whole block, this whole facility, this whole hospital, where people right now are terrified in great pain. People are rushing around like life was going to go on forever. May all beings in this hospital, whether they support staff, patients, all the us, the community, may we all be free of fear, free of making mistakes, all be appreciated and cared for, so we can give that care to others. It goes wider than a hospital. The whole special territory of Hong Kong. You have many friends, many lovers here. May you all be well and happy. Know you have a friend. You may never know who I am, but I care for you. As this energy just goes out, the more you give, and don't be cynical and think this doesn't work. Just give it out to yourself as much as others. People who have friends and associates much further afield, spread it out to the mainland, to the whole of the huge country of China. So all the lands of this world, down to Asia, to Australia, New Zealand. Well, I've got many friends and people who care about me and I care for them. Over to Europe, Africa, the United States, South America, the whole planet. Humans, animals, flora, birds in the sky, things which crawl underground. She spread this kindness to everybody, all beings. In this moment I give my energies all to you, so you may be free of fear and happy and well and find meaning in your life. And last of all, imagine, just imagine, standing in front of yourself, this person you've known ever since you were born, or maybe before, this person who bears your name, me. Imagine them as vulnerable, who hurts physically, emotionally, just like that kitten. You need kindness too. In this moment, imagining just you as the most important person in the world, the only one you're focusing on, and give the same kindness to yourself. May I be forgiven. May I be free of fear, of pain. May I be at peace with myself. All the kindnesses, the care you now give to this body and mind that bears your name. You've been hurt many times. Now you're at peace with yourself. I care for me. How does that feel? haven't judged. You haven't wanted anything out of this. You're just giving. Including this body and mind which bears your name. Open your eyes, but remain still. And then start moving again. So that's loving kindness, guided meditation, which was shortened. Sometimes I get into this and really get into it. I indulge in it because I like it. Did that work for you? Let's hope it did. The visualization, imagination. And first of all, that people need your kindness. If you think that doesn't work, I didn't do it this time, but for a year or two, when it was your best friend, the closest person to you in your life, and I got you really pushing a lot of energy into that person, I used to open my eyes and just notice the time and write it down. And I asked people afterwards. There was, say, 3:30 in the afternoon on a Thursday. Go and ring up your closest friend. Give them a call. And make small talk, but then ask them, hey, what were you doing at 3:30 in the afternoon? I don't do that anymore because I know it works. And people ring me up in the middle of the night and they say, hey, it worked. I called my best friend or my wife, called my parent, and I said, well, what were you doing at that time? I said, well, that's weird, I was thinking of you. Strong enough they remembered it. It's amazing, but it works. How it works, don't worry about trying to work it all out, but it does. People feel. Anyway, questions, comments before we finish off? Well, that's actually good timing, 15:45. Expected. Any comments for you? It's amazing what your mind can do. And I was just telling, as I told this to a couple of researchers over in Melbourne University, and said it, gave the link to Gerald, about, was it Professor Don Daly or something? Just hard science. Cause sometimes people have to do the hard science before they understand what your mind already knows about how the mind proven to interact with material stuff like random number generators and the quantum effects of the double slit experiment again and again and again. Just use hard science to show, yes, the mind can have a measurable effect on stuff, material. Once you make that breakthrough, then it's amazing what you, us, can do for this world. It's not stuff anymore. It's about us. Even in medicine, you're not treating a person. They're not treating you. It's a relationship which you share with that person who's a doctor, physician, the patient. Can you really tell? You ask. A great performer who's a great dancer, a great one of the monks I knew, eventually disrobed, he married a classical Indian dancer. And when they came and said hello, And he was Australian, but he was a musician before he was a monk, a musician afterwards. And he married this Indian dancer who was on the front pages of magazines at the time, very well known. And when I asked her the question, how can you dance, perform in front of so many people at such a high level? She said what many other athletes, performers, artists, pianists always say. Practice, 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 practice. But when they perform, they forget everything they ever learned. And they let the piano play the concerto. They let the brush paint the masterpiece. Let their feet just do the dancing. If you ever had those experiences, it's weird. But there you are. You're not in control anymore. You're just part of the performance. You're not directing it. Top surgeons have told me that too. One gentleman over in Singapore, I shouldn't say names, they just, they get the scalpel, and they just, it works. Fascinating stuff. Where we realize life is not me sitting here teaching you, you standing there listening to me. Something much powerful than that. What happens between us in that area we call the relationship between you and the scalpel. You and that person. It's amazing what happens when you trust what goes on in that space and how you can do some incredible things. Totally extraordinary. How anyone could perform to such a high level. You try and control it, you're so tense. You make mistakes. You just relax and let go. You've already been trained. Now's the time to perform. Have you ever had those experiences? It's wonderful to be a witness to that. Things just flow. You're in the groove. You're in the zone. Nothing goes wrong. So that's actually just, it's not a secret, it's not a trick. That's just trust in that zone. And whatever you ever do in your life, as a partner, as a father, mother, child, lover, associate. It's amazing just how you can perform to levels which are beyond you. How do you do that? Beyond you, but enhanced by us. Well, I'm just speaking from experience, that's all, not theory. Don't read this in books. I'm not publishing something that's secret. But that's how things work. Any comments, questions? Yeah. It is. So what to do? You can get download your favorite apps. Monks like me undercut the market by giving them out for free. But just because they're free doesn't mean they're worthless. That's what somebody said once. They rang up and said, "Here, you teach meditation?" "Yeah, I do." "How much do you charge?" I said, "Nothing." And she said, "Well, you can't be any good then." Because people think the higher the price, the more value you get. So I never say that anymore. When people ask how much I charge, how much are my fees? You know what I answer is? Priceless. So when you say priceless, you're not telling lies, but you're also just saying this is priceless.
Thank you, Ajahn. So I think it's about time to close the session because we know Ajahn tonight, he's still got another session to do, so we better reserve some time for him to have a good break before the evening session. So may I now invite all friends here to rise, to stand up. If you find it suitable, we can have our palms joined together. And in gratitude, we hope we can see you again in Hong Kong. And also, if today's teaching is helpful, let's see how we can remind ourselves to bring all this teaching back into our life as the gifts that we can offer to Ajahn. Thank you so much.
Okay. Sadhu. Sadhu. Sadhu.
Thank you, Ajahn. Thank you.
Signing books.
Well, I think...
Whatever. There's...
Okay, so of course we can offer our practice as the gift to Ajahn, but also to make his teaching trip possible, to make it happen to Hong Kong and everywhere around the world. It would be very grateful for friends to have donations to Ajahn's group to arrange all the activities. So here there's a donation box. Feel free to come and offer your donation here. Thank you so much. And please stay tuned to the rest of the activity for this Hong Kong tour.